Another transducer that is based more or less on similar principles, but it is more suitable than the previous one for position measurements of very hot objects is the so-called variable inductance transducer. In such a case, the magnetic field is due to the presence of a ferromagnetic nucleus. So the presence of a very physical, strong and robust mechanism makes this transducer more suitable for high temperatures than in the previous case, into which all the mechanism was supported only by wires and coils and on a small magnetic device. So in this case, the role between coils and the nucleus is upside. I mean, in the previous transducer, we have a lot of coils and a small nucleus. In this case, the role of the nucleus is prevalent, and the number of the coils involved in the transducer is substantially low. As you can see in the figure shown in slide 15, we have a C-shape nucleus, ferromagnetic, that becomes the seat of a magnetic field due to the voltage supplied to an inductor that is wounded in the upper part of the ferromagnetic nucleus. In the figure, we can appreciate the flux lines that are shown in magenta that follow the shape of the nucleus. In particular, they cross the horizontal part, cross the two expansions, the two vertical expansions, and cross the air layer between this nucleus and a small ferromagnetic blade, a small ferromagnetic foil that is located in front of the C nucleus. Consider that the probability that the lines cross the air layer is as higher as the closer the blade is to the nucleus. In fact, if this foil will move far from the nucleus, we don't have any probability, any possibility that the flux line cross the air part of the circuit and continue their road, let's say, in the foil itself. So this transducer is again valid, like all the previous one, for the measurement of small distances. When I say small, I mean the order of magnitude that could be corresponded to centimeters. X is the entity of the displacement that we want to measure. And to perform correct estimation, we have to introduce a new magnetic magnitude that is called reluctance. The theory says that it is provided by the ratio between the so-called magnetomotive force divided by the flux of the magnetic field. In other words, we can say that it is given by the ratio between the product of the current that crosses the inductor, time the number of the coils, of which the inductor is made of, divided by the flux of the magnetic field. I don't want to repeat the course of physics, but just to motivate and justify such a kind of expression, we can establish a certain level of similarity between the role of the reluctance in such a kind of magnetic circuit and the role of a resistor in an electronic circuit. In fact, it is clear, at least at the level of a concept, the similarity between the flux, better, the lines of the flux that cross eventually a circuit and a magnetic circuit, and the role of the current that crosses an electronic circuit. So we can say that the flux phi b plays a similar role in this circuit to what it is played by the current into an electric circuit. At the same time, we have to observe that the reason why we have a magnetic field in such a kind of magnetic circuit is due to the power supply provided to the inductor, and in particular to the coils of the inductor itself, and the coupling between the current that crosses the coils and the number of the coils itself will cause that kind of induction effect that will provide the presence of a magnetic field. So we can say that N times E, the number of the coils crossed by the current provided through the power supply, is the reason that causes the presence of the flux lines. As well as in an electronic circuit, the presence of a voltage is the reason that causes the current crossing the circuit. And the reluctance measures how the circuit is in favor to the passage, to the crossing of the current or not. So we can say that the law we have proposed in such a kind of slide is not far from the idea proposed by the Ohm law in an electronic circuit, and the reluctance is not far from the role played by the resistance, again, in an electronic circuit. Following such a kind of, let's say, metaphor, it is possible to apply to the concept of reluctance the same or a similar concept, a similar formula that corresponds to the second Ohm law in electronic circuits. In other words, we can say that in a circuit, in a magnetic circuit made up by several tracts, several, let's say, portions, the total reluctance is given by the sum of the reluctances for every portion of the circuit. And in turn, every reluctance is given by the ratio of the length of the portion considered divided by the amplitude, the section, I mean, of the circuit we are considering, and divided by the permeability. In other words, if the magnetic circuit we are considering is longer, it is clear that more energy is required to the magnetic field to perform a suitable flux that crosses the magnetic field itself, the magnetic circuit itself. So, in this sense, we can interpret the length of the magnetic circuit as an opposition to the presence of a flux in the magnetic circuit itself. Instead, we can interpret the section of the magnetic circuit as a term of favor to the passage of the flux lines. I mean that the larger the section, the greater the number of flux lines that will cross the magnetic circuit. And the permeability is, of course, inversely proportional to the reluctance, because if a material due to its internal physical structure is more favorable to the presence of a magnetic field, clearly the reluctance to the passage to the crossing of the flux lines will diminish, because the two concepts are one the opposite of the other one. In the circuit that we are considering, we have to immediately understand that the two more reluctant parts will be those that correspond to the two air layers, because the two air parts will have the lower permeability with respect to the other components of the circuit that are ferromagnetic, so very favorable to the passage of the flux lines. Typically, the permeability of the air is 1, instead the permeability of a magnetic material is 1,000, 10,000. Therefore, the total reluctance of the circuit can be easily demonstrated to be as 2x divided by the section of the air layer multiplied by the air permeability. Finally, we can have the inductance that is given, as the physics says, by the product of the number of the coils times the flux divided by the current supplied to the circuit. And by replacing in this expression the expression of the flux with the reluctance, we will have n squared times E divided by the reluctance times I. Finally, we can substitute the value of the reluctance with the expression just now evaluated, 2x divided the section time permeability, and we will have that L, the inductance of the magnetic circuit, is n squared times the section of the air layer times the permeability of the air divided 2x. Let's observe that the section A corresponds more or less to the section of the two vertical expansions of the magnetic C-shape nucleus. The first observation that we can do is that the impedance term L, the inductance, is not linearly proportional to the physical magnitude into which we are interested. In other words, L is inversely proportional to X. This means that it is not possible to perform the measurement like in the other transducers we have seen, by providing a voltage and measuring the current. But this is a very simple problem, because to have a good measurement, it is only necessary to do the opposite. That is, to provide a controlled current and to measure the voltage at the two edges of the group of coils we have wound around the nucleus. In other words, what really happens is that we supply a current to such a kind of circuit, and depending on the movement of the foil, we will see a variation in this current that is directly related, directly proportional to the x quantity, to the x size of the displacement the object had. I remember that we need a measurement that is linear and not inversely proportional, because that was one of the characteristics of the transducer we absolutely wanted to preserve since the beginning of our lessons. What is the sensibility of the transducer? It is only necessary to take a look to this formula, the formula I mean of the opposite of the inductance, that is the admittance. So we have 2x divided by n square a, the permeability of the air, and we have also omega, because we remember that the impedance of an inductor, of an inductive circuit, is j omega l. So the admittance will be 1 on j omega l, and we have to introduce omega in such a kind of expression. We could say, in other words, that the sensibility of the transducer is depending basically by the number of the coils, the amplitude of the section. Of course, it doesn't depend on the permeability of the air that is fixed. This formula says also that due to the fact that we want to have a robust signal in output, measurement at high frequencies are not suggested, are not advisable. Finally, looking at the slide 17, we can see that there is another typical usage of such a kind of transducer, that is not only one nucleus but a couple of them. One, let's say, in the upper part of the figure, and one in the lower part of the figure, but of course upper and lower in this case are only related to the figure we are seeing. Generally speaking, we can say that the two nucleus can be also located in the same planes, in the same plane. So the foil will oscillate between one and the other. This term, this word I use, oscillation, gives well the idea of the utility of such a kind of configuration, because when the foil goes far from the expansions of one nucleus, we said that the flux lines hardly are able to cross the air and to enter into the foil, joining to the circuit and really making, really realizing, carrying out a magnetic circuit. If the foil is very far from the nucleus, this effect doesn't work, and all the considerations that we did are not applicable and cannot be applied, I mean, and the measurement is not possible. But introducing another nucleus in such a configuration, we have that when the foil gets a displacement far from one nucleus, it gets also closer to the other one. So what we lose from in one part of the circuit is recovered in the other part, because we increase the coupling effect to the second nucleus when going far from the first one. This is very interesting because allows us to perform two measurements, two admittance measurements. The first, Y1, will be proportional to the X distance between the foil and, let's say, for example, the upper nucleus. The second will be proportional to the remaining distance between the foil and the second nucleus. So let's define L, the distance between the two, the first and the second nucleus. Let's define delta as the size of the foil itself. The distance between the foil and the second nucleus can be expressed as L minus delta minus X. So if we have an electronic circuit that joins, let's say, the voltage that can be read in the second nucleus through the measurement of the admittance Y2, and the voltage read in the first nucleus due to the admittance measurement Y1, we can conclude that the difference between the voltage, let's say, V1 and the voltage V2 will be proportional to Kx minus Kl plus K delta plus Kx. So at the end we will have a signal that is 2 times proportional to the entity of the displacement, and this is very good because it solves one problem, the problem that the longer the distance, the poorer the effect that we are measuring. And the second provides a more robust, a bigger signal proportional to the entity of the displacement. This electronic circuit exists, of course, and it is called Wheatstone Bridge. We will see in the next lessons how to connect to the couple of nucleus, and is very important because it allows a typical application, let's say, of such a kind of transducer that is used for controlling that the position of the foil, that is of the object connected to the foil, is correct between two possible extremes, two possible limits into which it is allowed that it oscillates, let's say. The measurement can be done even at relatively low frequencies. The typical application set, however, is 100 Hz, 1 kHz. And as I said, the typical environment into which such a kind of transducer is used is when temperatures are quite high, because we said that the structure of the transducer is prevalent in terms of magnetic nucleus that are more robust and more capable of tolerating high temperatures.